Royal Alouette, light utility helicopter threading its way through the deep alpine valleys, appeared as insignificant as a gnat against the backdrop of towering peaks. As the helicopter approached a mountain whose summit was crowned with three uneven knobs, Hank Thurston, seated in the front passenger seat, tapped the shoulder of the man sitting beside him and pointed through the canopy. "That's Le Dormeur," Thurston said, raising his voice to be heard over the thrashing rotor blades. "The sleeping man. The profile supposedly resembles the face of a sleeper lying on his back." Thurston was a full professor of glaciology at Iowa State University. Although the scientist was in his 40s, his face exuded a boyish enthusiasm. Back in Iowa, Thurston kept his face clean-shaven and his hair neatly trimmed, but after a few days in the field, he began to look like a bush pilot. It was a look he cultivated by wearing aviator sunglasses, letting his dark brown hair grow long so gray strands would show, and by shaving infrequently, so that his chin was usually covered with stubble. "Poetic license," said the passenger, Derek Rollins. "I can see the brow and the nose and chin. It reminds me of the old man of the mountain in New Hampshire before it fell apart, except that the stone profile here is horizontal rather than vertical." Rollins was a writer for Outside magazine. He was in his late 20s, and with his air of earnest optimism and neatly trimmed sandy blonde hair and beard, he looked more like a college professor than Thurston did. The crystal clarity of the air created an illusion of nearness, making the mountain seem as if it was only an arm's length away. After a couple of passes around the crags, the helicopter broke out of its lazy circle, scudded over a razorback ridge, and dropped down into a natural bowl several miles across. The floor of the mountain basin was covered by an almost perfectly round lake. Although it was summer, ice cakes as big as Volkswagens floated on the mirror-like surface. "Lac du Dormeur," the professor said. "Carved out by a retreating glacier during the Ice Age and now fed by glacial waters." "That's the biggest martini on the rocks I've ever seen," Rollins said. Thurston laughed. "It's as clear as gin, but you won't find any olive at the bottom. That big square structure built into the mountain off to the side of the glacier is the power plant. The nearest town is on the other side of the mountain range." The aircraft passed over a wide, sturdy-looking vessel anchored near the shore of the lake. Cranes and booms protruded from the boat's deck. "What's going on down there?" Rollins said. "Some sort of archaeological project," Thurston said. "The boat must have come up the river that drains the lake." "I'll check it out later," Rollins said. "Maybe I can pry a raise out of my editor if I come back with two stories for the price of one." He glanced ahead at a wide ice floe that filled the gap between two mountains. "Wow, that must be our glacier."
"Yep,
Le Langue du Dormeur, the sleeper's tongue." The helicopter made a pass over the river of ice that flowed down a wide valley to the lake. Rugged, snow-dusted foothills of black rock hemmed the glacier in on both sides, shaping it into a rounded point. The edges of the ice field were ragged where the flow encountered crevices and ravines. The ice had a bluish tinge and was cracked along its surface like the parched tongue of a lost prospector. Rollins leaned forward for a better look. "The sleeper should see a doctor. He's got a bad case of trench mouth."
"As you said, poetic license," Thurston said.
"Hold on, we're about to land." The helicopter darted over the leading edge of the glacier, and the pilot put the aircraft into a slow banking turn. Moments later, the chopper's runners touched down on a brown, grassy strip a couple of hundred feet from the lake. Thurston helped the pilot unload a number of cartons from the helicopter and suggested that Rollins stretch his legs. The reporter walked to the water's edge. The lake was unearthly in its stillness. No ripple of air disturbed the surface, which looked hard enough to walk across. He threw a stone to reassure himself that the lake wasn't frozen solid. Rollins's gaze shifted from the widening ripples to the boat anchored about a quarter mile from shore. He recognized the distinctive turquoise blue-green color of the hull immediately. He had encountered vessels of similar color while on writing assignments. Even without the letters NUMA painted in bold black letters on the hull, he would have known the boat belonged to the National Underwater and Marine Agency.